to get recaffeinated for this last session. Should be good. I've never had my chalkboard magnified before. I thought that was really cool. Okay, this last section, we're going to talk about, it's called the anthropic principle. And it's a fancy word. You'll just hear it said sometimes, so you know what we're talking about. The principle that the universe is finely tuned for life to exist. That as we start looking at all the different ways that, all the different things that go into making the world that we know it, man, how fine-tuned those things had to be for it to come out. So let me just talk just briefly just about where we've come to, how we've gotten to, ooh. Okay. I know, I need a smart board. I'm not that smart, though. I have to stick with this. Astronomy. Study of astronomy has been going on for thousands of years. The Greeks were able to figure out that, you know, it wasn't all stars, but there were planets, and they're studying this motion. So the study of astronomy has been going on for a long period of time. Study of kinetics, which is just the laws of motion. Kinetics, how things move. If you took high school physics, you know, pushing a box across a floor and the friction that goes against it, or sliding something down a plane, all the things about how things move in the world around us was a huge area of study. Study of light. Study of light, how light works, how it reflects through water, or refracts through water, how you can use light and focus it to be able to see things in a magnified image, looking out into space, looking down on a microscope, light, optics, all the things that go with that. Electricity was a big one. Electricity. How does electricity work? Electricity. How, and this is all in your back page if you fill in stuff. So electricity, what is that? From lightning strikes down to, you know, how it powers our homes today. Magnetism. These are things that people have noticed trends in these for a long, long time. People know about magnetism, you know, two rocks sticking together from long, long ancient times, but what is it that makes these things up? Magnetism, and then all the things that go into making the stuff, metallurgy. Mixing different metals together to make stronger metals. Metallurgy, thermodynamics. Thermodynamics, the study of how heat affects things, how chemical processes are affected by heat, just plain chemical reactions. Chemical reactions, when you mix two things together, what forms? States of matter, solid, liquid, gas, plasma. Now I'm going to throw in a really broad one here, biology. What are the living processes? How do all these things happen? We've got all of these different fields of science out there that have been known for a long, long time. Some are relatively new. But amazing thing that happens is we begin to study these things that we begin to lump and find out their core, you know, what is it at the basis that's teaching those things? We begin to find out that a lot of this stuff is related. Astronomy and kinetics was tied together by Newton and his theory of gravity. Which was amazing to think that the way that the planets spin around the sun and all that rotation, all that stuff is the same exact force that makes a ball roll down a hill and keeps us here on planet Earth. That was a revolution to think that those were the same exact thing. So Newton tied those two ideas together, astronomy and kinetics. Interesting about Newton, Newton was a theologian, actually. He wrote two times as many works about his faith, about scriptures, than he ever did about science. And he is known as, I mean, the dude invented calculus, like in a summer. He had a summer off because of the plague. They sent everyone out to the country, and he invented calculus. Genius. Genius. Everyone always asks about my son Isaac. They're like, oh, is it from the Bible story? And I'm like, yeah, but he's not. yeah, different Isaac. All right, Here's another cool one. Light, electricity, magnetism. From light particles flying through space to electricity that runs through currents to making magnets come together. This awesome Christian dude named Maxwell came up with four equations and tied all of those three concepts together. The theory of electrodynamics. Electrodynamics. All those three things are really just three of the same thing. It's all about the electron and how it works. And then these ones here, metallurgy, thermodynamics, chemical reactions, states of matter, biology, all come under the atomic theory. How an atom works. We talked about that earlier. The atom, the smallest, the building block, the apple illustration of how small an atom is, gives us all these different properties from how metals interact to form stronger metals, thermodynamics, chemical reactions, states of matter, biology, are all and adjustments to the atom. So we're starting to narrow down all these different things, bringing them smaller. And we have people that come along and progress these even further. Progress these even further. Einstein came along here. Remember I said that Einstein was famous for just throwing stuff out. He came in and just totally revolutionized. He came up with the special theory of relativity. Which what he did keep is he said that Newton was right about the gravitational constant. I'm going to use a different color for that. That there's this constant of gravity. But what he was wrong about was that time is constant, which seems weird that time would be something that's always consistent wherever you go. But he said, no, time's not constant. Time will change no matter where you're at. What is constant is the speed of light, which is C. Speed of light. Gravitational constant, the speed of light. These are the things that are constant. Time is a constant, which is kind of weird, but if you look at scriptures, you find that to God, a day is like a thousand years is like a day, and that just his time is not our time. He's working on a different level, so time isn't really a concern of God. God gave us a framework here, but it's not how he operates. It's not constant. So we see it coming in line with scripture again here. I'm going to toss in a couple equations here just because they're pretty. E equals mc squared is where this comes from, that famous little equation that all matter is energy and all energy is matter. And it's just bringing from that point in time where everything can come from nothing, comes from that equation. And then time is not constant as well. I'm not going to write that equation. But if you want to see it afterwards, I'll show you. So he had this special theory of relativity. He took it even further, and he came up with the general theory. He realized after about 10 years of working on it, fine-tuning it, he came up with an even better example of the general theory of relativity. So that's just kind of a linear thing, and just taking it further there. But then something goes on, and we have this revolution in science that was brought by Einstein's work in these two areas. And it's called the quantum revolution. And it's this idea that things exist in certain packets, that energy exists in certain states. You can't just have any energy level you want. It has to exist in certain little particles. And it changed everything we know, but what it did amazingly is that it brought together these two fields. Now, one set of equations brought together all of Maxwell's equations, all of atomic theory, and it brought into this, I'm just going to write the abbreviation, QED, quantum electrodynamics. Quantum electrodynamics. And it brought all of this stuff together into one set of rules, one set of laws. So we're finding all this knowledge we have getting more narrow and more narrow. Of course, when you probe stuff after a while, you begin to find there's some stuff that doesn't quite fit. We got these synchrotrons that are spinning matter around it close to the speed of light, exploding up. So we're finding all these different particles. And we're finding that there are other things other than just what we thought in atomic theory. Atomic theory was, you know, the electron, the proton, and the neutron. Well, all of a sudden we have quarks. Quarks make up the inside of protons and neutrons. So it's even smaller than what we thought. And it brought about these two new areas, a strong the strong nuclear force. This is the force that binds protons inside of a nucleus. We have the weak nuclear force. Which is responsible for radioactive decay and things like that. So we're narrowing it down, but then all of a sudden we kind of got wide here again. And they just keep discovering all these new little particles. So they thought, you know, I guess the universe wasn't meant to be brought down to a fine point. I guess there's just more stuff going on that we can keep track of. But as Einstein kind of gave this, he had this feeling that everything came down to one set of equations. There was no evidence that showed that. There's no evidence, but he just said, there's something to this. Everything should be able to be solved with one explanation for everything. And it wasn't Einstein that figured out. In fact, he spent the last 20 years of his life searching for this theory of everything. He never found it. But it led other people on this search. And finally they came up, they brought these things together. It's called the Standard Model. Standard Model of physics, and it brings together all of quantum physics, it brings together all of the parts that make up the atomic forces, the strong nuclear force, the weak nuclear force. It all makes sense in this standard model. So we're getting closer, and that's where we're at today. These are the things that we have the general theory.
Never done this. All right. So you got the general theory of relativity, you got the standard model. In the last couple years, we've had scientists that are still going down this vein of, man, there's got to be one explanation for all of it. And the thing that they're coming up with now, and they're bringing together finally these last two areas, it's called string theory. Maybe you've watched like a NOVA program on it or something. They have some really good ones. String theory. And just one set of equations that explains everything we've seen that branches out, that talks about. Just think about how big the gravitational force that keeps planets in their place, but also ties it to the force that keeps electrons orbiting and protons and neutrons together. And throughout this whole process, we're pulling together and discovering, they're finding these different constants in nature, things that can't be developed, that can't be defined. They're just there. They always have been. They've always been consistent. I wrote down a couple of them. The gravitational constant. The speed of light, which is constant.
There we go. We've got the elemental charge, the charge of electron, which is a constant in nature. It's always has been, always will be. It is that set value. In fact, scientists call these the God constants. Not necessarily a relational God that they want to have a, you know, personal relationship with, but there's no other way to explain them. They just always have been, always will be. They're what make the makeup of the universe that we have them. Electrodynamics, quantum mechanics, we have Planck's constant. Planck's constant there. We've got Boltzmann's constant over here in thermodynamics. I'm just writing the symbols here, and we'll show some of the, you don't have to know what these things are. The mass of electron. The mass of an electron, the mass of a proton, the electroweak force. All these things that have just been, they just are what they are. They've always have been, they always will. There's no way to explain them, there's no way to bring them out. But they have such profound effect on the way that the world is, the way that we exist, the way we are, that if you were to change any of these things, that we wouldn't be here. And you don't have to change them by a lot. I want to show you some examples here. The first one here. And it has to do with tying these to the. So I'm gonna number these. Number one, and it has to do with, if you guys look on the previous page where it has all of those listed anthropic. There's like seven facts listed there. So this is where the first fact fits in. And it's about the ratio, the existence of the stable nucleus. So the reason that a nucleus can be stable hinges on the ratio of the relative strengths of the strong and electromagnetic forces. The protons repel, the quarks pull them together. This is a Feynman diagram, my favorite scientist, so I had to throw one in here. But this is really a little more simple, kind of more simple. You've got the protons and the neutrons, and you've got these quarks inside, they're repelling together, and they have to be the exact right ratio. Otherwise, the nucleus is not going to be stable. If they're not the right ratio, if the strong force isn't strong enough, then the protons explode and nothing stays together. If they're too strong, it collapses on itself and nothing forms around us. You can't bind atoms together. All just based on this fine-tuned principle of having these two at just the right level. The next one is about DNA, and it has to do with atomic theory. So if you put number two here, that's a picture of a DNA strand. Not a real picture, we can't image that far down, but it just shows the complex of these spiraling helixes, these chains of data all wrapped together. If you pull this out, it's 2 meters long, but it fits in every single cell that we have. And it's finely tuned based on the mass of the proton. The mass of the proton must be exactly 1,840 times the mass of the electron in order for the building blocks of life, such as DNA, to exist and remain stable. The mass of the proton, this mass right here, has to be 1,840 times the mass of the electron in order for this all to work. Otherwise, the atom is not stable, they don't bind, they won't form. 1,800, one part in 1,840. But we're not even close to some of the fine-tunedness that we have in our universe. The third one, and it's going to fit right under here, the Standard Model. Mm-hmm. At 1 millisecond of time, so 1/1,000th of a second, the universe cooled enough for quarks and anti-quarks to condense out. We talked about quarks just very briefly. They're the basic building blocks. They're smaller than a proton neutron. They come in different flavors and different charges, but they have antiparticles to each other. There's like a quark anti-quark. When they come together, they annihilate and give off a photon of light. So they give off light. So at the very beginning, when all of these things were formed, they're all annihilating because you have an even amount of quarks and anti-quarks, except there was a ratio that was off. For every 1 billion pairs, you had an extra quark. And out of that one in every 1 billion pairs comes all of the matter we have in the universe. Now, this looks like a bunch of stars here, but these aren't actually stars. This is a deep field image. Each one of these areas is actually a galaxy containing billions of stars. Each one's a galaxy. All of this, and this is just one tiny little part of the sky we're looking up in, all that comes from this seemingly infinitesimally small one in every billion quark anti-quark pairs gives us all this matter that we see, and all the rest of that goes into the light and the energy that powers everything that we see. One in 1 billion. But that's not even the strongest thing we're seeing. The strong nuclear force. Strong nuclear force. If it's slightly weaker, only hydrogen would have been formed. The strong nuclear force is what holds protons and neutrons together. If it's slightly weaker, only hydrogen would be produced in the world around us. This is a nebula. So this is a star forming. It's bringing all of this matter together. Gravity is pulling it together to form a star. We see this out. This is an image from the Hubble telescope. If it's slightly stronger, this strong nuclear force, all hydrogen would be helium. And all hydrogen would be helium, and we would have no star generation because of that. It would all decompress. Only 25% of it would remain. You have to have 25% of hydrogen. This is also fine-tuned to the formation of carbon. So if this is off by just a little bit, no carbon would ever form in our universe, which is the building blocks of everything, of all life that we see. It's essential to DNA, it's essential to all that type of stuff. So the strong nuclear force. Let me see here. This next one here, the rate of expansion.
rate of expansion. Or we said that the universe is expanding around us. We see it out there. If it's expanding quicker, if expanding more, then the universe would just kind of fizzle out. Things wouldn't form. Scars wouldn't form. Stars wouldn't form. Things like that. But if it's a little bit stronger, then the universe would collapse. And the ratio of this, the rate of expansion, has to be accurate within 1 in 100,000 million parts. So that's 1 in 1.000000000000001 is the accuracy of which the rate of expansion, this rate of expansion that Einstein's theory, at first he neglected and he said, oh no, this can't be right. But if it was too strong, that much stronger, then this is a collapsing star. This is a supernova. And everything in the universe would eventually be brought down and collapse in a supernova and just be a big, huge flash of light and we wouldn't exist. All based on this, that expansion rate. It's another one with the general theory of relativity. The amount of matter and energy present at the creation of the universe had to be very finely balanced. Otherwise, the universe would collapse because of the strength of gravity. If it expands quickly, if not, it would expand quickly, ripping everything apart. The ratio of this one is 1 in 10 to the 60. 1 in 10 to the 60, the ratio of matter and energy at the presence at the beginning of the world. 1 in 10 to the 60, that's 1 with 10, 1 times 10 and then 60 zeros behind it. That's the fine-tunedness that had to be just right on. Otherwise, we just wouldn't be here. It just wouldn't exist. These are how fine-tuned God made the world around us. This is how narrowly this envelope for life is. This is how specifically God, when we say we are fearfully and wonderfully made, man, this seems like an understatement when we think about what God did around us. But you know, all of this pales in comparison to this last picture here. This is a picture of a black hole. I know it doesn't look black because it's all bright, but that is a jet of fusing particles coming out. It's just pure energy shooting out of the center of that black hole, which is predicted. It's the M87 galaxy, so it's way out in the universe. Each of these bright dots are other galaxies with hundreds of thousands, millions of stars in each one of these. This jet that's shooting pure energy out into the vacuum of space is 5,000 light years long. So the light that leaves here before Abraham is just now reaching out here to the end. Not like driving in a car or spaceships, but traveling at 180,000 miles per second. And it takes it 5,000 years to travel this jet stream. This is a black hole. This is what, you know, as the universe is collapsing. And one of the things that we find, one of the coolest things that we find from a black hole is a black hole, we can find out the ratio, we can find out how fine-tuned our universe was at the very beginning. Like how specific we had to be created. And this is going to bring in a bunch of different things here. We're going to bring in the law of thermodynamics. Which number? We're on number 7, aren't we? Law of thermodynamics. We're going to bring in quantum mechanics. We're going to bring in the general theory of relativity. The law of thermodynamics has three laws. The second law is called its really original name is called the second law of thermodynamics. And it states that things always have to get more disordered over time. That nothing spontaneously comes together with more order than it had in the past. And there's some rules around that. Some people will say,
hey, this is why evolution can't exist, because things don't get more ordered as time goes on, but there's some other reasons why they do. It has to do with the amount of energy you put in. But at the beginning of the universe, we can say that the second law of thermodynamics absolutely applies. There's no other energy coming in. So if we go way back to the beginning, things had to be more ordered in order for us to be where we're at now with the amount of order we have. It's called entropy. You don't have to remember that at all. So they began calculating, what was the entropy at the beginning of the universe? What did it have to be? And one of my good friends came up with this equation, Mr. Stephen Hawking. Not really. He's not my good friend. Stephen Hawking. And entropy is you think entropy would be have an E, but it doesn't. It has an S. And it pulls in all of these. Once again, it's a formula, but it's a very beautiful one, so I thought we had to show it. It's related to A. A is the horizon of a black hole. So it's an area. This is an area. We've got Boltzmann's constant from thermodynamics. We've got Planck's constant from quantum mechanics. We have Newton's gravitational constant. We have the speed of light. All of these constants of nature that God set forth at the very beginning come into this equation and predict what the entropy, what the order of the universe had to have for it to expand to where it is now. And the chances of it being that level are one to the 123rd power. One and one to the 120, that means with 123 zeros behind it. Now, let me explain how big that number is. If you were to be able to go through to each atom in our universe and draw a little zero on it, just to mark it, you would run out of zeros before you ran out of, you'd run out of atoms before you ran out of zeros in order to count this high. It's higher than the number of atoms in our entire universe. And it's saying for the world to end up exactly the way it is now, to sustain life, to sustain us, for us to be where we're at, is the same chance of you picking that point in space to expand everything around. It's 1 in 10 to the 123rd power. Ridiculously small. It led Bernstein-Hawking entropy formula. This leads to his quote at the end of A Brief History in Time. It would be very difficult to explain why the universe should have begun this way, except as an act of God who intended to create beings like us. So what do we do with this information? Stephen Hawking, he intellectually knows this. He looks at this entropy formula that he developed, and he knows the chance of what it would take for it to start off like this, and his only conclusion is that an act of God must have created it. An act of God must have done it. In the beginning, God created. However, what has he done with that information? That's my question to you. What are you going to do with that information? He might believe in God, but he doesn't believe in a personal God who cares about him. And that's the powerful thing about God. It's not that he did all of this, which is amazing, that he created the world in the way he did and with the degree of order and the degree of care, but that he cares about us is the amazing part. That he has all of that going on, but us as individuals, he loves us so much that he came down here on earth to die for us. That's the type of personal God that we love, that we serve. And it's the thing that gets left out of so many people. They can get to that point where they say, okay, I don't understand, so there must be a God, but to realize that God loves them, if you don't get that, you've missed the whole point. That the whole story of Scripture is about God trying to rescue us from our own bad choices, from our desire to live apart. He sent his Son to rescue us, to bring us back into a relationship with him. And if you walk out of here today and you don't get that, then all of this, you can have all the formulas in the world, look at all the images from space in the world, but you miss the point of why God came. You miss the point of why he gave us Scriptures. And if that's a decision you've never made before, to put your faith in a God that loves you, I want to give you an opportunity right now. Would you guys bow your heads and close your eyes here for just a moment? God just asks us to accept that forgiveness he offers. And you can do that right there in the quiet of your heart right now. You might just say something like this: God, thank you for loving me. of all the ways that you could choose to exist, of all the things you could have chosen to do in this universe, God, you chose to make me. I'm sorry for the way that I've rebelled against you. I'm sorry for the way I've lived my life outside of your boundaries, but God, I accept your forgiveness today. I ask you to forgive me. I want to start a relationship with you. In your name I pray, amen. If that's something you prayed today, I encourage you, please stop myself or one of the other pastors. We'd love to just talk to you a little bit more about that. And as we have spent the last 3 hours or so here just talking about how intricately we form, I hope that your faith has been built up today. I know we've talked about, maybe so you came in with some very strongly held beliefs about how God created the world. And I pray that everything we've done today has just increased that faith. And my goal is that you know, I'm here to answer any questions you have afterwards. I'll be hanging out in the lobby. But a few resources. Did most people here sign up for the class? Most people? If you didn't, just shoot me an email this week. I'm going to send you guys out an email with just kind of a bunch of books and stuff that I've used to put this together. You can go and do some additional resource. There's just so many different ones depending on the topics. I'll kind of organize it according to topics and what you want to know. And you can read some stuff on your own. And it's just going to be, I'll just send that out via email for everyone. The other thing is that if you guys have any questions, I'll be out in the lobby. But also this weekend, we're wrapping up our Twitter series. Pastor Greg's going to be back tonight. It might be a long service. He's been 4 weeks of rest, so which is good. So he got some good rest. He's ready to be back. He's excited to be back. So make sure you're back this weekend for our wrap-up of Twitter. And then next week, we're talking about rehab. And it's about the things that we've done in our lives that just need to be fixed, whether it's, you know, relationships or addictions, things that living outside of God's boundaries causes us pain. It causes us things that only God can fix. And I encourage you for that series. It's going to be great. This is our last of our summer discipleship classes, so thank you so much for being here. We're going to launch all of our fall opportunities on September the 14th. It's a Wednesday night. We'll have a bunch of different classes on Wednesday night. Encourage you guys to sign up for those. And there'll be a brochure coming out with all the details on that. So with that being said, thank you guys so much for being here. It was awesome to spend the morning. So, all right. You guys are dismissed. Thanks so much.